Well, everyone, welcome to San Francisco. Public Words Project is in San Francisco. Woo-hoo. And we're here to meet a very wonderful young woman who's breaking the stereotypes of what we all of us crude people think millennials are and what they do. She's breaking the mold, cutting the path and setting the world straight. So, tell me your name.
My name is Jobel Gakuya.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks
what? For having me.
Of course.
Yeah, we're here in San Francisco, and I love seeing you guys and meeting you.
So we brought the whole bespoke
crew
brain trust up to San Francisco. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Right. We're going to just getting to know you, and then we'll break into like what you do and what's going on.
Okay. Right.
So you told me your name. Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in San Diego, California, in a small town there, a community called Mira Mesa.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, and you got up here somehow, so we'll get to, you went to school up here, right?
Yeah, I went to SF State for urban planning with a focus in international development work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I fell in love with the vibe up here and, like, people's consciousness up here and how they kind of build their community up here in like a more conscious way. So that's why I'm here.
Excellent.
And stayed here, yeah.
So you told me where you grew up. And what's your favorite childhood memory?
Oh man, my favorite childhood memory. I think I grew up with a really big family. So my mom has 8 sisters and 3 brothers. So we grew up with all our cousins around all the time. So I think it would just be always hanging out with them and having sleepovers and kind of just being kids and having fun. I think one memory now that I think of that's popping up is that my dad has always been this like fun, like imaginative, like funny guy who just kind of just loves being a kid and having fun. And I think one thing that sticks out is that I think some nights where my cousins would sleep over, he would wake us up at midnight and he would like, we would always go on like either donut runs or like burrito
runs.
Yeah.
Nice.
And just like fun stuff like that he did for us was pretty awesome.
That's a special memory.
Yeah.
That's a special, the spontaneity and just like keeping you on your toes and
exactly.
And then donuts.
Donut,
good Lord,
yeah.
That's awesome.
And just like having fun doing the simple things, I think, is what I've learned from him. And just having fun with what you have and not really always wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me that at a very young age.
That's a gift to appreciate what you have right in front of you.
Yeah.
I'm finding out as I get older, the small things are what really matter.
Yeah.
Because the small things add up to wonderful, wonderful things.
Yeah, exactly.
So growing up, what was your biggest struggle growing up?
Man, my biggest struggle growing up. Wow, no one's actually ever asked me that in a long time. Let me think. Oh, okay. I know my biggest trouble growing up is that I've kind of always been like an old soul and like a weirdo.
I see the old soul portion. Weirdo,
yeah.
You can own
later,
that, but I have
weirdos. You'll see it like later when I get comfortable. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think for me, I guess I always kind of dumbed myself down to kind of like hang out and try to like be with people my age. Mm. And I didn't realize actually I guess I just would dumb myself kind of down. I had to learn this like later in life, that I was just different and that was my superpower. But I think for me that like it was just
that.
A lot of just learning and kind of being in spaces and like being bored in my head but trying to act like I wasn't bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I didn't really understand that at that time, that I just was kind of more mature and kind of thought differently and was an old soul. I think I would always feel more, I would actually have more fun and kind of feel more welcome, like speaking with older people all the time since I was a kid.
That old soul thing. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think for me, it was like my biggest struggle because I didn't know that it was at that time that it was okay to be different. And it was okay to like...
It takes years to figure that out.
And I think when I finally did figure that out, things just started flourishing, and it's your superpower. And I still, this day, like, I still can't hang out with people my age.
Neither can I.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's your favorite food?
Oh, man, my favorite food. has to be burritos for sure.
Yes.
Yes. I love burritos. But
okay, we've had deep dish pizza. We had two mac and cheeses. Dr. Parker and Lisa Baxter mac and cheese. That's all I remember right now because they're always around me. So
burritos. Yeah, burritos. Mexican food is the best. I love
what kind of burrito? Any kind of burrito or just like burrito?
I don't know why, but in San Diego, our burritos there are amazing. Or SoCal in general, but I grew up like with carne asada burritos, California burritos, but I'm vegetarian now, so I literally just get California burritos without the meat. And
what's a California burrito? Like beans and cheese?
No. California burrito is just french fries, guacamole, salsa.
What?
Yeah.
That's a burrito?
California burritos? Well,
I'm going to have to look for it. I'm like, french fries and burritos, my two favorite things.
It's like a burrito with french fries added to it. It's amazing.
I just started salivating. Yeah. Okay. So your favorite food, what's your favorite word?
Oh man, my favorite word. That's a really good question. I'd have to think about that. My favorite.
We can't move on until you tell me.
Okay. What's your favorite word?
Ubuntu.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's my favorite word. I am because we are.
Yeah.
And everyone's catching on to it, so I got to find another word pretty soon.
Yeah. Oh, I guess my favorite word's humanity. Right?
Excellent.
Everything leads up to that.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of crazy because since this entrepreneurial journey the last 3 years, I go back into my old journals and I go back to like cards people give me.
Mm-hmm.
And the word humanity is always in it.
So kind of when did you start journaling?
I started journaling, I think, definitely, well, like actively all the time in college and when I moved to India.
Okay.
Only because all these experiences started happening to me and I kind of wanted to get to know myself more and kind of just put out all these ideas and thoughts out there. So like actively, so when I was 24, mm-hmm. I'm about to be 31 now.
What?
Yeah. I'm 30 going on 31.
Awesome.
Next
congratulations.
Week.
You
yeah.
don't. Yeah.
Yeah. but actively when I was 24 and I think it's just something that I'm always going to do.
And what, do you find it purposeful?
Oh, yeah. It's part of my morning routine.
Is it?
It's part of my night routine.
Would you recommend that for other people?
Definitely. I mean, I'm a huge person of, like, really mastering yourself and, like, getting to know yourself. And journaling is one thing for me that allowed me to do that
mm-hmm.
and kind of allowed me to stay clear on my course and kind of stay clear and not get so afraid of my purpose
mm-hmm.
and kind of just stay grounded and explore myself.
You know, I started journaling in fourth grade.
Oh, wow.
And I still have that journal.
Oh,
I have all my journals from fourth grade to my 30s. I stopped journaling in my late 30s.
Okay.
Life started taking over.
Yeah.
But you know, that's when I should have kept journaling the most. Then at that particular time, just to track what was going on mm-hmm. and examine it later on. So I'm fucked. Yeah. Sorry. I'll have to put explicit on this, on this bio. So you, we know your word, your food. What's your favorite book?
Oh man, my favorite book. That's really hard. I read a lot of actually nonfiction. A lot of my friends try to make me read fiction. The only fiction book I've ever read is The Alchemist. And I always go back to that book, huh?
What do you think of that? One of my former bosses bought that for me for Christmas about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah,
what'd you think?
Didn't like it?
No, I liked it. Okay. I say to me, interesting is a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's interesting. It's funny about words, how they take different connotations, but interesting to me is not a bad thing. Interesting to me is fascinating. So,
I really liked it for me because it was given to me at the right time in my life. Mm. And it was like when I was moving to India and kind of exploring. So it had a lot of key words in there for me that was like saying, when you put your mind to something, like the whole universe kind of conspires for it to happen. So, mm-hmm. like, there's little things like that in the book that kind of I held dear in my heart at that moment because I was such in a transitional point. So, for me, that book actually spoke to me a lot because I felt like I was going through that journey mm-hmm. as Santiago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I was going through that journey at that same time. And that book kind of, I went on the journey with him. And as I was going on, just for me. So, for me, it was, like, really meaningful at that moment. Yeah, I don't think that's my favorite book, though. That's the only fiction book I've read, though, in the last 8 years.
So, you know, I asked these kind of questions because I want to get to know you and, you know, and relax before we jump into the deep end. But, so what, like music, we were talking earlier, what kind of music do you enjoy
at this particular? I grew up listening to old school hip hop. Right?
I know what you have in your apartment because I've seen it. So
I'm a huge, huge hip hop head. Like I said, I had older cousins all the time around me, so they were always listening to like the newest things. And like when my friends were listening to like pop stuff,
Did you break dance when you were younger?
No, I didn't. Okay. I wish I did. Yeah. I freak dance though, and I'm just kidding. That's not a thing anymore, right? Yeah. I don't know if it is. Yeah. But yeah, I grew up listening to hip hop, a lot of like roots reggae, old school roots reggae, dub reggae, just a lot of music that has more soul.
Yeah, oh yeah.
A lot of me, like I grew up listening to a lot of blues too, and like jazz, yeah. A lot of soulful music.
No wonder I feel connected to you.
Yeah, yeah. That's just how I always like music with meaning. I don't really listen to new music now. Recently I've just been listening to a lot of instrumentals.
So you familiar with Etta James?
I love Etta James. Yeah,
that's why I love you. Yeah. I remember the first time I heard her sing I'd Rather Go Blind.
Yeah.
And I felt it at the base of my belly.
Yeah.
And I felt her just shake me from the base of my gut all the way up to my heart, to the top of my head.
Yeah.
And I knew my life was forever changed when I heard her voice. Yeah. I've never had anybody punch me in the stomach and then just lift me up off the ground and change my life. And from that moment on, I was always a blues fan. And I just discovered everyone, Coco Taylor, everyone. I mean, even like the foremothers of blues and And I had someone ask me one time, well, you're so sad because you like the blues. Yeah. Blues is about life.
Yeah.
And they're telling you life how it is and to learn from it, not to just keep living in that cycle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
You should watch this documentary called Muscle Shoals. Have you seen it? It's really
no,
cool.
No, not yet. Yeah. Not yet. I will. I'll check it out when I get back. So also a great way to know about people is to find out what makes them, what they listen to, what they read, and what makes them laugh. Mm-hmm. So who's your favorite stand-up comic right now?
Right now? Man, like I told you, I don't watch new stuff. I watch a lot of old stuff.
It doesn't have to be new.
I always go back to Chappelle's Show. Prince skits, James skits, old school Cat Williams.
You might have a husband by the end of the day. I'm just telling you right now.
Old school Cat Williams.
Oh my God, Cat Williams. Yeah. I brought him up when I was talking to Lisa Baxter. Yeah.
Those kind of folks. Yeah.
What's your favorite movie? Like, and you don't
City
have to qualify.
God.
What?
City of God.
Oh my God. So we're in a hotel room in San Francisco and we're going to do a group podcast after this, and Dr. Wilson's just like flipping out. I think if you're single, there might be a marriage before we leave San Francisco today. That's awesome. I love this. I love this, how music and art brings people together to do good. So so your movie, you City of God, I haven't seen City of God in a long time, but that makes sense as I'm getting to know you. Mm-hmm. And as we get to know you more, it's going to make even more sense. So we asked you all that good stuff. So I have a question I started asking everyone. What advice would you give to the kid you?
The kid me. Wow. The kid me. If you have an idea, just do it right now. Just do it right now. Like, it doesn't matter how old you are, how much experience you think you have, just do it right now. Mm-hmm. If I knew I could start a business when I was 16, I would have done it. But I didn't know I could. I thought I had to go to school, kind of gain experience, and do all these things before that. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm doing it now, I realize I did have so many ideas as a kid, and I could have just done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we're seeing kids that are 12, 13, 14, 15 years old that are starting businesses. Mm-hmm. And making millions off of it on YouTube or different e-commerce channels and like blog sites or even on Instagram. So I would tell myself, just do it. If you have an idea, just do it, and kind of don't worry about it, just do it.
So do you identify as an introvert, extrovert, or ambivert?
Oh,
did I say that right?
Yeah.
Ambivert.
I'm definitely an introvert, but I have extroverted qualities.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it comes out when I'm comfortable and like when it needs to come out. But I'm definitely naturally introverted. Yeah.
So with your job, which we're going to get to pretty soon, do you have to do a lot of presentations and public speaking?
Oh yeah. I mean, I had to learn how to do that. I mean, these are skills
you
can
that.
Learn.
Tell me that. That was my next question.
Yeah. I think at first everybody's kind of scared to like go up there and like build the courage to speak about things. But then I kind of had to learn that if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to talk about the things that I care about, the things that I want to do, then I have to get past these trivial things of being afraid to speak about my vision and idea in front of people. Mm-hmm. So what I did is that... I just spoke. I just did it. I just did it every day. I built up the courage to do it, and it got better every time.
Courage against what?
Just courage against myself and against, at that point, like when you're thinking about these things, for me, I was to myself a lot. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think the world would kind of respond to it the way I would do. Like, I think any of us that has an idea, you think about it and then you kind of like doubt yourself. Like, oh, is this stupid, or are people going to like this?
So we're taught
kind of
that.
We're taught that. And you kind of get in your head. But then after a while, I was just like, man, like this purpose, this kind of vision is bigger than me. Why am I going to get in my own way? So I had to kind of step up and kind of just make it happen and do it, because...
So you said you stepped up and you got in your own way. What was the catalyst? What point were you like realizing that you were getting in your own way?
I think when...
Because that's a big discovery for somebody.
Yeah. I think for me is when I wasn't getting the results I wanted.
Okay.
Right? Because mm-hmm. I kind of discovered that the people that gain the most are people that give the most of themselves. And I can't really...
That's the next t-shirt. Write this down, somebody. That's the next humanity t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's beautiful, by
that,
the way.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. And you see that in every really authentic, sustainable, successful person. They give most of themselves. They give all of themselves, and that's why how they gain the most back. I think people don't really know what you want to do or what you're up to if you don't speak up.
Where did you learn that particular anthem? Because I don't think a lot of Americans understand that. Did you see it? Was it modeled, or did you discover it?
I discovered it over time because I, as an entrepreneur, I was kind of like, it is a lonely journey. So I had to kind of read a lot of about other successful people who've made it that I look up to, read about their stories, and you always see their successes, but you never see their failures. So I was reading about people's failures, right?
Okay.
I was reading about people's failures, okay. And I was kind of saying like, hey, like all these people that are super successful failed. So
and what we don't know that we have to really embrace that.
We have to embrace that, yeah.
And not just on posts on Instagram and Facebook. It's like we have to embrace that, yeah.
So then when I looked at that, and I looked kind of like, I'm a huge fan of Oprah, like all of us are, right? So I like look at people like Oprah.
She's a queen. I'm ready to start a Dr. Wilson, Dr. Parker, and Oprah cult. We're going to start the churches now.
Exactly. But if you look at people like that, they gain the most because they give the most of themselves, right? You impact people. A mentor of mine said, if you want to be a billionaire, help a billion people. So this is how to be a lasting company, have lasting value, have something for the world that will actually, like, one, you can gain a lot, and one, you're giving a lot. And that I kind of started seeing that's kind of how the world works. Mm-hmm. People I look up to that has given the most of themselves, has put their ideas out there on the table, have kind of like made this work, their life work, has gained the most. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have an interesting company. Mm-hmm. But before we get to your company, you went to school. Were the top student, right?
Yeah.
And then was offered a job where?
I was offered a job in Assam, India.
Okay, and I'll take it from there. Tell us the story, sister.
Yeah, I mean, at that time when I graduated school, I knew that I always had a global perspective in life. And at that time, I was offered a job from my professor to go to rural India, Assam, India. This is like the countryside. Like, mm-hmm. Indians don't even go there. Yeah, okay. So super time bomb countryside. I've never been to India before. It's called Assam. That's where all the tea farms and rice farms are. It's a super countryside and rural area. So I spent 2 years there just living with the people, living with people in rural communities and living with people in slums and kind of getting to know the community.
Describe a slum there. So that people have a real... Give us like an oral picture of what it is to live there.
Yeah, so one of the largest slums in India is called Dharavi.
Okay.
And it's the slum that's in Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay. Well, there's a visual. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's about 1.2 million people that live in this slum.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
Yeah. And that's a whole city there. There's 800,000 in San Francisco.
So you lived in one of the homes there?
Yeah.
Tell me about one of the homes.
I mean, it's half this. A home there is half the size of this hotel room.
Right. And this is an intimate hotel room.
Yeah. And there's six people living there. People usually have like a bad rep of like representation of what a slum is, but when I was welcomed into it, everybody was very nice, very polite, and very warm for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting because they kind of build their own economies there and their own infrastructure in there. So it's like,
awesome.
We think of a slum. The slum's been there for so long, I can't even know. It's just been there since Mumbai ever existed. Mm-hmm. So they have their own kind of infrastructure, their own economy in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a happening place for people. Like they have everything from like recycling businesses there, everything from like ceramics, pottery. They just have this whole infrastructure there. For me, when I think of this slum that I visited, was just people.
So we were talking about how warm and comforting, and then also you staying in a slum in India. So continue telling me about that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, all my expectations of a slum was kind of thrown out the window when I actually stayed with a family there. Like, when you think of a slum, you just think that it's kind of like dirty and like there's a lot of crime. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any of that. There's actually a huge sense of community there.
Wonderful.
And people kind of got each other's backs, and everybody's
working. Well, there's some positivity there, right, in that situation, turning a negative into a positive.
Exactly. Everybody's working. Everybody's flourishing. Everybody's kind of there for each other and their family, and they're just doing what they need to do. And this is just kind of where the system brought them, and this is where they have to live.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience there. And that, I think Dharavi is just an older slum, so I can't speak for the newer slums that are arriving in the world, because I know that some are in very bad condition, some are very violent, and some are very, has very high crime.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my experience with this one, yeah.
So this leads into, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, so I'm a social entrepreneur.
You're that, but we're leading up to something, folks.
Yeah.
We're leading up. We're going to get there. Social entrepreneur.
Yeah, I'm a social entrepreneur. I believe that for those who don't know what social entrepreneurship is, I believe it's basically a for-profit business model that answers that solves a problem, a social problem or an environmental problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of fell in love with this concept. Mm-hmm. I came from like working and interning from nonprofits. I saw how government aid agencies work, and I kind of got obsessed with the idea of social business because I feel like I worked for a corporate company after India, and I realized that I kind of took best of both worlds. I realized that, like, yeah, this corporate company is making a shit ton of money, but it's not doing anything for the world. These nonprofits, they can do good in the world, but if they don't have funding, their impact stops.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we kind of build a self-sustaining model that can allow us to end and solve some of the world's biggest problems? So for me, my biggest thing that I want to do, and what's my life work, is how do we end poverty? I don't feel like it's 2018 going on 2019, and I don't think people should still be hungry. I don't think kids should still be hungry. I don't think malnourishment should still be in the case. I don't think people should still be homeless. I don't think people should still be illiterate, right? So it all starts with, how do we end poverty versus Band-Aid fix it?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, I started two businesses so far, kind of.
Tell us about them.
Yeah. Kind of solving that. So the first business was called Amor Amor.
Okay.
And I started this when I was in India.
Okay.
That's where it kind of formulated and kind of started, because when we were living in these communities, in these rural communities, and seeing people in these slums, I realized that They don't need charity. They need investment and empowerment. They're very entrepreneurial people. So,
but the charity is the Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, the charity is the Band-Aid, exactly. Mm-hmm. I didn't see people that needed desperate help. I saw people that need a tool to kind of elevate their businesses, be an entrepreneur, and kind of grow their own economies. For example, in the rural community, I would see the women weave beautiful scarves, beautiful silk scarves, beautiful 100% cotton scarves that were handmade. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is that they would all, people from that village and the surrounding village would all walk to one market that was probably 6 to 10 miles away. And the thing is that people weren't buying the product there because it was available everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hey, like, what if we were to get these products, put it online, and kind of sell it to people in the West? Because mm-hmm. their purchase power is powerful, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's grander.
It's grander, yeah. Right. So, like, how do we kind of connect their product into the global economy and really use entrepreneurship and business to put an end to poverty mm-hmm. versus Band-Aid fixes? So we started kind of curating a marketplace of goods from around the world that were handmade by women that were living below the poverty line. And we ran that company for about 3 years. And what we found was that we were selling to a lot of mid-age women in the Midwest that weren't mm-hmm. diverse. Mm. Like, so I was like, how come I'm selling to a lot of mid-age women that I can't really relate to?
Right.
Like, I live in San Francisco. I grew up with, like, a lot of friends who I know care about the planet and people. Mm-hmm. How come they're not buying this stuff? So I realized,
good question.
Yeah, so I realized that the whole fair trade social impact world is still a bubble. It kind of still stems from colonialism. They don't create access for everybody to be part in this social good, social impact space and to do good. So I mm-hmm. found that and I started researching that. So then we launched Humanity, which with Humanity, we realized, okay, if we're going to sell products to the younger generation and to diverse millennials, and make it cool, then we have to design more modern, minimalistic product. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we designed product that we think people in larger cities and urban areas would like. And we ended up being really successful with that. We found that...
And you're still successful.
Yeah, still successful, yeah. So we found that a lot of these people that we're talking about, these diverse millennials... Every person we spoke to wanted to do good. They just didn't know how. So it's like, okay, let's create a brand. Let's create a company that kind of illustrates what it is like to be a good human in the world, no matter what color your skin is, what status you are, what economic level you are, what education level you are.
I just want to stop and say,
be human.
A good human.
Be a good human, yeah.
Not just be human, be a good human. And yeah. I think we need to really listen to that. Be a good human.
Yeah.
It's so powerful and simple and just, it needs to happen. And yeah. There are some good humans out there.
Yeah.
We just need to get that to catch on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like what we were talking about earlier. It's not like they have to fly all the way to another country to feed orphans. It's be a good human now.
Yeah.
Be a good human by how you treat people around your block. Mm-hmm. Be a good human by how you respond to certain things in your life. Be a good human by smiling at a stranger. Yeah.
Be a good human, like we talked about earlier, holding the door open for somebody.
Simple
or
things.
Smiling at somebody.
Exactly.
You know, simple making things. Eye contact and just nodding. It goes really far.
Exactly. And I think we're all responsible for that as human beings that take space on this planet, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's kind of this universal law for all of us mm-hmm. that we kind of have to follow to really... to really hold up space here and kind of set an example for the next generations. Like mm-hmm. we're creating history. We're creating an example now mm-hmm. by the way we live our lives.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we kind of created this whole kind of narrative with our company Humanity to inspire.
And where can we find Humanity? Yeah,
humanity.com. So okay. It's HMNTY.com, Humanity without the vowels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the past year we played with how do we kind of educate millennials and people of color mm-hmm. That didn't necessarily know what sustainability, social impact, fair trade meant mm-hmm. Because they weren't being taught that or they weren't being catered to with these other companies that were around.
It's definitely a privileged term.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. How do we educate
not
them?
Not a survival term.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Which it should be a survival
term,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because in the grand scheme of things, it's going to take everybody to make a difference in this world. Everybody needs to be a part of it.
We do.
We can't just have these people in the room that are rich, privileged, and entitled saying, we're going to save the world. These five people in the room, right? It's going to be all of us. It has to be all of us. All of us need to be in that room.
And also, it's about not saving the world by patting them on the head.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I mean, it goes back to that word we were sharing earlier, Ubuntu. I am because we are.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to start embracing that on a universal level.
Exactly.
You know, because things happen to everybody. You know, Malibu went up in flames.
Yeah.
You know, and they're recovering quicker because they have privilege, and I'm so sorry about what they lost. But, like, it really enforces the sense of Ubuntu. They really rallied together to help each other. In the fires in Southern California, the Ubuntu was created because everyone came together. The shooting in Thousand Oaks, and then right after the fire. I mean, we're so programmed for Ubuntu and coming together to help each other. And also, these are real American values. These are the original American values, or like the American values I was raised with, where you help your neighbor. Whenever I get into a debate with someone about what's American and what is not American, Americans take care of Americans. Americans take care of people, and that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes back to, like, Americans need to remember to be good people.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we're not really doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of us aren't. Majority of us are. Some of us are not. But anyway, let me get off my pedestal or my pulpit. Let's get back to you.
Yeah.
So humanity is doing some great work.
Yeah. So now we're actually evolving to our app, right? So I wouldn't have gotten here if I didn't. Yeah.
Let's talk about that technology. Woo-hoo, I love it. Tell me.
I actually would have never gotten here without doing the first two things, right? So the first, we started with curating a marketplace and hiring women and men who live below the poverty line around the world to give them work. And second,
around the world, not just in India.
Yeah, around the world, yeah. And then second, we started designing more modern product and getting millennials involved. So this last time I went to India last month, this is new news, actually.
Breaking news right here.
Breaking news right here, exactly. Is that when I was working in these communities, I would go into their homes in the slum, like up in the hills, while I was in Peru this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would walk in, and I felt kind of weird this time because I would come in and say, hey, like, this is the next job, this is the next work, this is our partners, blah, blah, blah. And then they would look at me and say, oh, how can we help you? And that's when I realized wow, these people don't need my help. You know, they need a tool to kind of elevate their own businesses, their own product.
Tool, technology, application? Is that what the...
Tool, technology. Exactly. Tool, technology, application. And then after Peru, I went to India. And I saw the same thing. Everybody's connected. Everybody's starting to get smartphones. These artisans that we were working with and met in India, all of them were like, how can we help you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're not asking me for help. They're like, how can we help you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I realized at this time, like, wow, like, there are a lot of fair trade organizations out here that are hiring them.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is that I'm not really seeing the results, right? Like, what's going on? Like, it's because we come in, we give them these jobs, and then we go away.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. How, and then I started thinking on the next level, because one of the artisans looked at me and said, oh, do you want me to call you an Uber? And I said, what? You have an Uber? And they're like, yeah, I have an Uber.
Where was this?
This was in Peru.
Okay.
This is when I started thinking about it. Yeah. They're like, we have an Uber. I have Uber. I can call you an Uber. And I was like, you have Uber? They're like, yeah. My husband drives for Uber. He like rents a car, drives, comes back home. We have Uber. We use Uber when we need to go to the city. And that just blew my mind.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, at that point, I realized, okay, wow, like, this is the next billion that's getting connected. But nobody's creating products and services catered for them, right?
A billionaire by helping a billion people, right?
Okay. Yeah, if you want to be a billionaire, you have to help a billion people. So there's about 3.2 billion people right now that live below $2 a day, and they're all getting connected. They all have access to internet, and now are getting connected on smartphones. So this is where the light bulb hit, is that I realized, like, okay, if I were to hire 500 to 1,000 artisans, that's great, that's awesome. But there's a billion to 3 billion of them out there that need help, that need this kind of impact, that need a tool to kind of empower their own lives. So that's when I realized it's apps like Uber, for example, that's kind of creating a shared economy for them. So I thought out of the box and said, okay, like, what if my product is not products like accessories and clothing and things like that and giving work? What if my product was an application and a platform that kind of allowed entrepreneurs, that like artisans and farmers around the world, to sell their own product and tell their own story, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, what if we were to create the world's largest market on an app with zero stock? Because right now what's going on in these countries is that they don't have visibility. Mm-hmm. Who's making our luxurious coffee? Who's making our chocolate? Who's making our ceramics around the mm-hmm. world, and like beautiful pottery and like all these weaving and beautiful textiles? It's these people who live under $2 a day. But what's happening is that the middleman's coming in and paying them less and making millions out here. So what if we're able to get rid of the middleman by creating an app that kind of directly allows an artisan who's illiterate mm-hmm. to have space in the global economy, right? So how this would work is that we're designing an app that is designed for people who are illiterate. Because a lot of them are, but it doesn't mean that they can't be added. They can't have equalized opportunity like everybody. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is we're designing an app that's more visual than reading. So mm-hmm. it would be step one, upload a picture of your product.
It would
step
be a picture two, of doing that, yeah, right?
Okay. Tell your story. Step three, sell your product, right?
Love, tell your story. Yeah. That's my shtick. Yeah. Love that. Okay.
Exactly, because I felt kind of weird these last few years, and now that I think of it and able to reflect on it, is that I shouldn't be telling their story for them. They're smart and innovative enough and powerful enough to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. I felt kind of weird coming into their community.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, taking pictures of them and kind of sharing their story in my voice mm-hmm. when I realized they have the power to do that on their own. They're very powerful people. I don't have to do it for them. Whereas, and now it kind of drives me crazy seeing fair trade companies and like they're doing great work, but it drives me crazy seeing a glamorized kind of impact, kind of telling their story. Because it's true. Like I've had friends that tell me that a lot of them kind of make up some of these stories to get the marketing sale.
Yep.
And I can't do that.
I know, I'm a marketer. I know.
Yeah, a lot of people make up these stories so people will buy more products from them or feel connected to this woman in a village in a country in Africa mm-hmm. or women in Cambodia. They make up stories yeah. and kind of exaggerate it.
Yeah. And I'm, or find the worst looking child and
yeah,
send it. Yeah,
exactly. And I don't think that's the way anymore. And it should never be the way. But I think what I found this last trip is that they're capable to tell their own story. They have a voice. So why not make a tool to kind of help them connect with humanity?
What's yeah. their story?
Yeah,
we gotta
what's
do
their story?
Maybe we should exactly. do a campaign with some of the stuff you're doing on Public Words
exactly,
Project.
Exactly. Yeah. What's
whatever
their
we
story?
Can do to be of service and help spread the word. I mean,
yeah.
you have a bigger audience than we do, but we're growing. But yeah. I would love to be able to support you in any way we can.
Yeah.
And
likewise.
You're doing great work.
Yeah.
And I have you. To applaud you for, not that I'm in the place to applaud, but I really appreciate and celebrate you for having the wherewithal and the vision and the wisdom
yeah.
and actually the lack of ego to do this. Because a lot of people would, I really respect your lack of ego
oh,
and your compassion
you.
And your service, because it's so easy to fall into, you know, the id and just want to be, you know, stroked and gratified and glorified, ego versus egotistical, but you're doing the service. And
yeah,
there's, and I celebrate that. And I really, really appreciate that. I'm starting to talk in circles, but when I get excited, I do that.
Yeah.
But so humanity's going to do well. You're doing is humanity the name of the application also?
Yeah, it's going to be the name of the application. I mean, we're transitioning fully to the app now.
Mm-hmm. And when will that be out?
We're going to do beta testing in the spring. Okay. I mean, this is kind of a bigger idea, right? Like we're connecting the world and humanity economically, socially, and culturally.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do it right. We want to do it right. We want to really redistribute the wealth in the world and kind of put that option and that opportunity to the people. 99% mm-hmm. of the people, we don't want to pay out the top 1% anymore. We want to redistribute the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to take time. And I know that now. Before I was always like, quick, this has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But
it happens when you get older, you mature and you realize the process may take a little longer, but
We want to do it right. We're finding five organizations that we're going to partner with and really run beta testing
Good.
With their artisans and their entrepreneurs.
Is your beta testing going to be based only in San Francisco, or do you need anybody in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we're gonna do customer side. So Los Angeles, San Francisco would be awesome, and then also beta testing for the maker end for our artisans. Mm-hmm. We want to see how they play with our app and kind of like how it flows and kind of see how we could kind of do, because nobody's ever made an app for them to sell a product like this, right? So we're gonna learn a lot from that.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to have one that serves domestic people here? I mean, like,
oh, definitely,
like,
yeah.
There's so many talented people here in the United States, and I would love to see that, like, celebrated in that type of application here with people who are in similar situations, but in the United States. There's so many talented people here. And the whole thing about the tool is we need that here.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, we're all about local and global impact.
Awesome.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
the people who are listening to this saying, what about Americans, about serving America? We are global citizens, and she's doing the work on a global level, and it's also going to be a local level. So just calm with it and start using humanity to buy your shirts and buy your hoodies and buy your sweatshirts and start spreading the love now.
Exactly. So. Every product you buy from us supports the app.
Hanukkah's here, or Hanukkah's almost done. Christmas is coming. Valentine's Day. I think everyone needs a humanity t-shirt for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So... what else can we talk about before we wrap up? What else would you like to share?
What else would I like to share? I think just what we're talking about, do what you can in the world, right? Like, you don't have to really fly across the world to kind of help people. Mm-hmm. You can do what you can right now in your own community and how you treat people. And to kind of, for me, like, I'm big on using your imagination to be innovative, to create different things to really solve problems. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of these Band-Aid fix kind of solutions.
No, you're right.
To things. Yeah. How do we put an end to poverty? How do we put an end to hunger? How do we put an end to homelessness? Mm-hmm. How do we put an end to illiteracy? How do we put an end to all of this? Because... mm-hmm. billions and trillions of dollars have been going to these foundations and organizations, and things are just getting worse, to be honest. And that kind of upsets me, because I feel like in a world like we live in today, where I have an app that can bring me mineral spring water and an organic cheesecake to my door in an instant, in an hour, I think that's kind of ridiculous and kind of silly if there's still people that can't eat. There's still, like, I think 18,000 kids who die of malnutrition every day. And I don't think that number should be there. I think we live in a time of innovation. We're going to Mars. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we're doing these crazy things, but we're forgetting about each other. And I think that's wrong. That's inhumane. I think it's part of our legacy to kind of take care of each other.
Be good humans.
Yeah, be good humans. It doesn't matter if you're across the world or around the block. We're still all the same, if you think about it.
Like, we are the same. Yeah, that's why so many people spend so much time trying to make themselves different or highlight the differences.
Exactly. But
no matter color of skin, I mean, that's why racism exists and this type of systematic racism, because people want desperately to be different.
Exactly.
And we are all the same. We have blood, we have eyes, we live, we die, we get sick, we fall in love, we fall out of love, we get our heart broken, we get married, we get divorced.
Exactly. I love that.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Whether you're gay or straight.
Yeah.
And I think you're
exactly. Color of your skin, we're all the same. We're all trying to find some kind of peace in the world, some kind of sense of purpose, some kind of, like what you said, love and kind of belonging, right? Mm-hmm. In whatever capacity we can.
It's all about community. Yeah. My parents gave me the gift of community when I was a child through camping and motorcycle riding. I've been riding a motorcycle since I was a little girl, and my family rides motorcycles. And the one thing I like about riding a motorcycle is there's a sense of community. There's these hand signs. My parents, if you ever talk to my parents, they'll crack up because I just wanted to ride a street bike so I can do the hand signs. Or you're like, this means there's 5-0s, slow down. You know, there's a cop coming. Yeah. And then also, like, two fingers down, like, this means keep rubber to the road. You're wishing a fellow person to be safe and keep rubber to the road, shiny side down. You know, there's this misnomer with bikers. Of course, there's always people who do dramatic things, like, you know, Hell's Angels, the mongrels and stuff like that. But they're also just like regular people who ride motorcycles and understand they're in clubs and they understand the community of it. And that's my sense of community from camping and motorcycle riding. from dirt bikes to motorcycles and to bicycles, I'm always drawn to things that bring strangers to this non-verbal communication. But when you're to the side, a cyclist will always look at you and go thumbs up, thumb down. A motorcycle, thumbs up, thumbs down. You don't do that in a car. You just kind of look. You're like, oh, hey, they're fucked. You know, it's like, they got a cell phone. They'll figure it out. But so that I appreciate community, and I appreciate that we're talking about it and celebrating it and honoring it. And and that's one of the things you're doing is you're building these, you're taking these, from my perspective and just from my humble point of view, is you're taking these international small communities and you're mashing them together to make a grand community of global impact.
Yeah, I love that you say that because on our app, what's starting is the what you see first is the Pangaea supercontinent.
Mm-hmm.
It's together that it opens up. Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. That's what we're doing. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Is that your new favorite word?
Yeah. No. I think it's always been humanity. Yeah. Yeah. Now that I think about it, throughout my whole life, that word just keeps coming back,
mm-hmm.
and it's because I believe in the good in humanity. I believe in the good in people. We all have it. We're all not robots. We all kind of have that spirit in us that wants to do good. I mean, a friend of mine told me a story this week that made my day.
Mm-hmm. And you want to share it?
Yeah. She lives in Bend, Oregon. And I guess they were at Walmart. And I guess a stranger paid everybody's layaway.
I love that.
Yes. A stranger paid everybody's layaway that they've been holding on for all, like, the whole holiday to, like, buy for their loved ones or themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A stranger came in and paid for all of it. And it kind of, like, made me teary-eyed and, like, stuff like that, you know?
I'm fighting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that kind of keeps the world going.
My eyes are sweating a little bit right now.
Yeah. Things like that keeps the world going, I think. Every time... like, I think once a week, every time I go to a coffee shop, I always buy two coffees, and I tell the person to give it to the next person you see.
Oh, awesome.
That you feel like needs it, and just say it's just on a
stranger. I'm going to start doing that. Yeah, I'm going to copy. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, do that.
I
only started doing it because it happened to me one day, mm-hmm. and then I was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to continue this. So once a week. I do small things like that because I think
coffee for one for two, one coffee for two. That's what I'm going to call it.
One coffee for two.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that when I get back to LA. Might do it tomorrow. Sure. Well, I'm here in San Francisco. I'm going to do it.
San Francisco. And
one coffee for two. Do you hear that, everyone?
One coffee for two.
Hashtag.
Yeah, exactly.
High five.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. And I know we're going to get these two when they
get back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy too doing that because the cashier is always like, wow, nobody's ever done that. Yeah. And you get this like exchange and you see the little hope and inspiration mm-hmm. in their eyes. But I think it's small things like that that kind of keep the world going,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like it doesn't have to be recorded all the time, but I know it is happening.
No, it doesn't have to be recorded all the time.
I feel it. Yeah.
But that's one thing I would like to see on social media a lot, one coffee for two, or just that type. I would like to see that more than some of the shit that's out there right now.
Exactly. Flex goodness instead of material stuff, right?
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
I don't care about your Lamborghini or your Gucci shirt.
Oh, my God.
Are you a kind person?
So there's a documentary on Netflix called Meme America.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good Lord. I suggest everyone watches it because it gives it gives you a comprehensive look of what social media, the influencers, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's fascinating.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, I watched it and it actually bothered me. And I had to like go for a walk with my dog and like, you know, take some air in and clear it out of my psyche and my soul. And, you know, I'm not that touchy feely, but it was just so like, it was sad and educational at the same time. So I would rather see flex goodness or one coffee for two on social medias. And I think these influencers need to stop with some of this shit of like the sensationalism. Okay. Yeah. This is my deal. I'm going to make with social media. You guys ready? You influencers out there. So the five people that listen to the show, please tell another five people.
Yeah.
I would like to see social media. If you're going to do the sensational stuff, I want to see for every five sensational things, I want to see one good, positive, good human practice.
Yeah.
One celebration of humanity. And then I'll be more into what they're doing.
Yeah. I love that celebration of humanity.
Yeah, we have to celebrate. Yeah,
exactly. I think it's about adding value. How are you adding value? What are you really influencing? Are you influencing me to put makeup on? Are you influencing me to try to look prettier? Are you influencing me to buy a Lamborghini? Like, what are you influencing
me to get so drunk that I pass out? I'm almost in an alcoholic coma. It's like, that's, you know, that was my college days, not now.
Same.
No. But that's what college is for, education and being crazy. But, I have to tell you, JoBelle, it's such a pleasure to meet you. And flying up here to see you, and getting up at 3:30 in the morning, I don't need coffee right now. I am just running on joy. And thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. And we're going to keep talking to her. You're going to be coming back for podcasts. And we're going to try to do some joints together and do some good work together.
Yeah.
So everyone out there in Public Words Land, have a wonderful Sunday and rest of the week. And try to do something good. And we're going to challenge you. JoBelle and I are going to challenge everyone who listens to the podcast. One coffee for two. And if you don't drink coffee, one tea for two.
Yeah,
it's a song. Yeah. One tea for two. Or I one water that. For two. Yeah, so spread the love. Ubuntu and have a wonderful, wonderful Sunday. Thank you.